Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hey, how's it going?
Wunderbar.
Wunderbar. That's like me pretending that we haven't just been chatting for 10 minutes.
Well, you know.
Sometimes we start right off the bat, sometimes we don't, and people just never know which is which.
Yeah, well, nothing could be as awkward as the first episode of Strong Woman Radio that I recorded with my friend Vivian yesterday, because...
Like, really not as awkward as we were on our first podcast?
Well, it probably was less awkward than that because I was just a little more familiar in general, but about that level, yeah. So, and we did it through video because part of what's awesome about Viv and I is that we crack each other up, and so it's better on video. But I'm
sure...
So were
you, like, sitting in the same room and recording a video of you, or you were, like, side-by-side on Skype?
Yeah, we did video chat on Skype, and I had no idea we were going to do video chat, so I was, like, in my jammies without a bra on. Poor woman.
So you're not going to be posting a video podcast?
No.
Should, though. That would be really cool.
Yeah, maybe someday, because we're both hand talkers, and at certain points I would, like, see her flailing her hands around trying to describe something, and I'm like, Viv, no one can see you.
Like, see, yeah. I see podcast gold right there. Yeah.
Yeah, so, as promised last week... Strong Woman Radio is actually happening. It does take probably about 2 weeks from when we have a show done and ready to when iTunes will finally hopefully approve it and post it. So Matt's working on getting all of the production done and loaded and requested into iTunes.
Poor Matt, producing two podcasts a week now.
He loves podcasts. Are you kidding?
He's a He-Man.
He is so excited to be done with books and doing other things. So if only we could actually be done with books.
Yeah, so did you mention to him that there's this whole design part yet?
He's editing the book right now. So that's why, you know, I said he's working on producing the podcast because... We owed a whole lot of stuff to our publisher yesterday.
this is, I don't think, what people... I don't know. I think it's really, really hard to understand the process of writing a book until you've actually done one. But it's the last couple months where, like, the deadlines become not as much guideline deadlines anymore, and they become more like, we need this now deadlines. And I always find that, like, some of the most... stressful. Like, even though there is sometimes a little bit of wiggle room, the wiggle room's like a day. It's not a week anymore. And
We're not in that phase because we turned our book in compared to where the, like, send it off to print date is way more time than any other book that we've done, like twice the amount of time that we had to do that for the other books.
That's awesome. I would so love to do that.
But it's also like a lot different than the other books. So we wanted to make sure that, you know, we're working so many different elements and design things and we're...
Oh, and you've got a lot of information, right?
Like, it's... And
that's really much more demanding design-wise.
And it's kind of nerve-wracking because we've never, like, told people what to do before. We've just kind of been like, oh, you know, paleo's great. Here's food
Welcome
to eat.
Welcome to my world. Yeah. It's really intense because you don't want to be wrong. Yeah.
So, I mean, I basically just wrote the book and was like, listen, if this is wrong, it's because I've been following Sarah Ballantyne's advice, so you can sue her.
Oh, no. No, that's awful. Please don't sue me, people.
Oh God, that was just a joke. Like, if that is, if there's even any like basis for that, then I wouldn't joke about it. Like, it's a joke because it's not happening.
Phew. Okay, we're good. So
don't sue either of us. Let me just go back a second. No, don't do that. It's not nice. There's nothing to sue.
It's, yeah. Suing's mean. Something.
Oh, moving on. That just got intense. So,
sorry.
Strong Woman Radio. If you're interested in a completely different side of my personality, I'm just going to tell everyone it is an explicit podcast. It is a
How
very.
How are you going to be able to go back?
I know. Well, it's the same.
You're going to start dropping F bombs all over the place, aren't
no,
you?
No, it's because this is the 1 hour of a week where I can guarantee that I won't curse. Like, I just couldn't commit to more than that.
Yes. So, little known fact about Stacey is she does curse noticeably, and I don't very much. So, it's kind of weird.
I like it when you curse, though. It's so cute.
I know, because when I do, it's like really for emphasis. Because
I know,
and
it's like you make it very clear that you're really upset. And I'm like, oh, okay, you mean business. You just cursed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's only when I'm like really angry about something.
Yeah, that's not how Stacey curses. Stacey curses no, like the word yellow. It could, I mean, interchangeably.
What color is that lemon? Curse word.
Curse word yellow. Yeah, so my point is that this is intended to be a paleo family-friendly podcast, and that is what this podcast is. And if you like that, this is not changing. Awesome. This is what this is. And that is a part of who I am, and it's great. Then there is another part of me that likes to lift heavy things and say curse words. And if anybody's ever watched the lifting videos that I post on YouTube, you know that there's a curse word in almost all of them. That's just when I'm talking about lifting heavy things, especially with another person who lifts heavy things.
Usually at the end when you're celebrating having done it.
I am so excited. Those are the words that I know.
So I am like the loudest person in my box, but I like just grunt and scream. But it's like when I'm lifting the heavy thing. So I'm like lifting a heavy thing, I'll be like, rawr! And my kids will, every once in a while, like they'll be playing in the back room and they'll poke their heads out and they're like, Mom, is that like angry screaming or are you just lifting something heavy? I'm like, just lifting something heavy, it's fine. Which is making it really hard to teach my 4-year-old not to scream at things because she doesn't understand the difference between, like, sometimes you scream when you're lifting something heavy, it helps. And she just likes
actually,
screaming.
Okay, awesome fact right now. I'm going to lay a knowledge bomb on you that I guarantee you you're going to like. Are you ready for this?
I am totally ready.
So I've been seeing this Arosti guy. Did I tell you about Arosti last week?
No. Okay, are you cheating on Matt? What's going on?
If you want to know what Arosti is, I'll tell you in a minute, but I'm going to tell you the story. So I'm seeing my Arosti guy. All right, I'll tell you what it is. It's facial muscle manipulation. So it's like soft tissue chiropractic. And I've been having some issues with my right knee because I have very tight muscles because I hurt my knees last November, and then I started overcompensating by tightening my hips and my quads and using them in a different way so that my knees wouldn't hurt. And now my hips and quads are so tight that even though my knees have healed from the barbell that dropped on them in November, I'm still having pain now, but a different kind of pain, and it's all muscular related. So I'm going to this guy so that he can manipulate the muscle and loosen the muscles. And then I'm getting like physical therapy exercises from him to strengthen the muscles that got weak when I was using the wrong muscles. Does it make sense?
Yes.
So Arosti.
I really had to focus to follow it, but yes.
Okay, great. That's Arosti. So part of what Arosti is someone digging in to the parts of your muscles that hurt. You know, when you roll out on a foam roller, like, it hurts.
Yeah.
Well, this guy is applying crazy.
He's like a human foam roller.
He's like a crazy amount of pressure, human foam roller is what he is. And, you know, with like a medical something
right,
or other.
Right. Like, actually you
qualified
know,
to do it. Yes.
Doing something technical and educated. Yes.
So I'm in there, and he finds like this pocket of really awfulness, and I
that being the technical term,
right? And I shout a curse word because that's what I do, and he starts laughing, and I'm like, "Listen, like if you're gonna be ripping my quad apart, this is what's gonna happen." And he's like, "Yeah, next week you get the scalpel. Just this week, it's only my thumbs, though." So we're joking, and he starts telling me that. There's a scientific study that came out, and I don't know when, and I didn't ask him for references, although I'm sure he can give it to me, that tested people by putting their hands in a bucket of ice water as long as they could hold their hands in ice water. And for the first group, they told them that they could not curse. So it was like, you know, whatever you need to do, you can't curse, put your hands in this bucket of ice water as long as you can. And then the next group, they separated and put them in the exact same scenario, but told them that they should curse when they experience pain. And whichever group, you know, and they tested to see which group could go longer. The average time on the group that didn't curse was 5 minutes in the bucket. The average time for the people that did curse was 10 minutes in the bucket.
So they did that on MythBusters.
Did they?
They did exactly the same way, except they had the same people, and they had like 5 words they were allowed to say that were non-curse words, and then they, you know, recovered, and then they did it again, and they had 5 words that they were allowed to say that were curse words. And I think they got, yeah, something like, it was like a 50% improvement in how long they could keep their hands in the ice water when they were cursing.
So there is like, something to the grunts and the shouts and the cursing that happens in the gym. It's because that stuff doesn't feel good.
Because it increases your pain tolerance. Well, I just am geeking out right now that MythBusters was basically like a pilot study for an actual scientific study. Either that, or your Arosti guy
is referencing MythBusters as a study.
Is actually referencing MythBusters as a study. Either way,
I'm going to call him out the next time I see him and be like,
"It's science.
Yeah, I need a reference to that scientific study." And
yeah,
if he's like,
"I want to see it," yeah, he'll be like, "Yeah, I have to look that up. Maybe next time." Then you know it was actually MythBusters. And I only say that because I'm a huge MythBusters fanatic. That should come as a like huge
who is not?
For our listenership.
I mean, if you are not a MythBusters fanatic, it's just because you haven't seen it. So go see it. If you like this podcast, you will like MythBusters.
This is true. Yeah. We should have them on the show someday. They would be the most irrelevant guests ever.
Are you suggesting that you think that they have time to be on our podcast?
Totally.
Because I would also like to get Chris Powell on the podcast, if you have a connection there.
I'll work on it.
I'll even take Heidi. I mean, I would be happy to have Heidi if Chris is unavailable.
Wait, you know, we should get the dynamic duo of Chris and Heidi.
Yeah, that's so likely. Maybe we can just tell Chris and Heidi that we booked MythBusters, and we can tell MythBusters that we booked Chris and Heidi
maybe
to give some sort
them.
Of credibility to the
right.
podcast that our mothers and four other people are listening to.
Right. I'm sure there's like at least 5 other people. Maybe what we should do is we should threaten Chris and Heidi and say, you either come on our podcast or we're each going to have to gain like 200 pounds so we can go on your show.
I looked it up. I would have to gain that much. And there's like a whole bunch of information on there that like I couldn't qualify for it. Like you have to be 50% overweight, which neither one of us are. And, you know, myriad of other things that I was like, I'm not really able to sign up for that.
We were at one point.
Yeah, at one point.
Yeah.
We're not very good candidates anymore.
No, and I really don't want to get that unhealthy just to meet some cool people.
And I can tell you, carb cycling isn't really a lot of fun. So I'm not
and
sure
that's
really
what he does
for
the
for
whole
that.
Year.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I think I wouldn't like. I'd be okay with the low carb days. It would be the high carb, low fat days that would kill me.
Yeah, the high fat, low carb. I mean the high fat, low carb days are like, oh my God, this is so exciting. But those are also my non-training days. So like, I can't do too many of them. But for most people, they have more of the high carb. I mean, they have more of the high fat, low carb days because most people aren't training the way that I train. So it's been interesting to figure out how to eat high carb, low fat most days and still get enough omega-3 to balance the omega-6 and to not want to just pour avocado oil down my throat.
Just the image of like chugging.
Yeah, not even coconut oil on the spoon. Just literally, I have visions of like chugging a Tassimay's like salad dressing. Like, I don't even need it on the greens. Just give it, just intravenous. Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to really go long term with this.
you've done 2 weeks now?
Yeah. And I'll tell you that everything about what I've read in the book is true. Like, it could take up to 3 weeks for the carb bloat to go away. I'm still carb bloated. And the suggestion that he has about working out in the morning and having your carb meal at night the night before, highly recommend that, because I worked out Sunday much sooner than I usually work out. I worked out at noon instead of 6 p.m. and the day before had been a fat day because it was a rest day. And like, I have flipped that tire a million times before at high speeds with no problems after a long workout. And I went to lift the same tire yesterday after like the fat day the day before, and not too many carbs in me yet because I'd only had one meal that day. And that tire felt 10 times heavier than it usually feels. So,
So you want to start trying to work out more in the mornings? Or you
no.
Want
to, I'm just saying, like
in the evenings.
Yeah. It's just, it made a huge difference. It didn't occur to me that, like, I didn't have 8 hours worth of carbs in me. I only had one meal worth of carbs in me, and that made a difference. So, it's all just a learning thing. If nothing else, I'm learning about my body and how it works and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, it's been interesting. I don't think I'm doing any damage to my body. Like, I'm still very, I mean, I wrote a book on lard, so I'm still very much into healthy fats, and I'm, you know, it's figuring out how to get them in on the days that I'm not training, but still improve performance. So, yeah, we'll see. Right now, I just really want to eat something with carbs and fat. Yesterday was what they call Sunday fun day in the book, and they encourage you to, like, you know, just go crazy. And for most people, maybe that works, but I can't do that.
I can't do that because if I let myself do that, I will literally eat the entire week's worth of calorie deficit.
Yeah, exactly. And if I ate something sweet, like, I would have a really hard time, like, not eating something sweet the following week when I wasn't supposed to be. Like, it's so much easier for me just to avoid it on Sunday and to have a good week the following week than, like, you know, live it up on Sunday and then struggle all week mentally. So yesterday, like, was the day that I could have eaten things, and I did eat carb and fat in the same meal, and it was wondrous. Like, there was little, like, magic, like, sparks flying up from my food and, like, music playing. Yes, as I ate the food, and I was like, oh, this is so wonderful. And then now I'm not. So, yeah.
Well, I have nothing to add. I was going to say something like, the week's almost over, but it just began, so.
Yeah, no. Well, at the very least,
when
I'm competing.
When the time this airs, though, it'll almost be Sunday fun day again.
That's true. And I am competing Saturday. So Matt and I have agreed that, like, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I will not be carb cycling. I will just be eating the foods that I want to eat. So anyway, we'll see. I'm going to write a post about it at somewhere between the 3 to 6 week mark. Maybe, you know, somewhere around 3 weeks, I'll be in a groove and my carb load will go away and I'll be like, oh my God, you guys, this is the best thing ever. But right now I'm just kind of like, if someone else tells me to eat another hard boiled egg or protein, I'm going to lose it. That's kind of how I'm feeling right now. So
that's a sad story.
I'm sorry.
I was just thinking it might be hard to tell at 3 weeks if you're competing right at the 3 week mark too.
I know.
So that's going to kind of mess things up.
Which is why I'm saying 3 to 6 weeks. Because anyway, we'll see.
Well, I jumped on a 24-inch box today.
I'm very happy for you. I know how, it was a huge mile marker for me when I did that in CrossFit. If you hadn't told me already 20 minutes ago, I would have been more enthused.
You could have acted more enthused.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
So what's really cool about that is I tried jumping on the 20-inch box probably like 5 or 6 weeks ago was the last time I even tried jumping on the 20-inch box. And I couldn't do it. I could sort of get my toes on the edge and then I'd fall off backwards and I just couldn't get my feet to land over the top. So I was stuck with I was doing a 12-inch. And so so today we were doing it as part of our strength and not part of the WOD. And it was basically just – it was three rounds of three jumps and it was basically see how high you can go. So I was like, I'm gonna try and work on this 20. I'm going to see if I can get this 20 nailed down. So the first 20, I land with my feet like really far ahead of me and my center of mass really far back. And I kind of fall backwards off the box and just barely catch myself, which was a little nerve wracking. So it took me like a while to get over that and try again. The second one, I landed with my feet most of the way on the box. I was able to actually stand up and then step off the box. I was like, okay, like that was not bad. And then the third one, I landed and then kind of fell to the side and did this like awkward, not really fall, like slow motion fall slash dismount where I kind of rocked to the side and then rolled off the box into a push up and then stood up. Like it was lots of people asked me if I was okay. And I was like, totally fine. Because it was this weird slow motion, not graceful dismount. And that really shook my confidence. So I like gave it a minute. I was watching, the people around me. And there's one woman in our box who's just phenomenal. And she was doing a 37-inch box jump. And I was just watching her and going like, holy smokes. And so then I tried it again and I completely landed the 20-inch. So I did two more sets with the 20-inch and I like really got it and I got into the groove and I was able to land actually relatively softly without like slamming into the box. And like it kind of just clicked all of a sudden, like just it, how to pull my knees up really high. And so, the other people were finishing and I was kind of watching around. I was like, maybe I should just try a 24 and just see what happens. So I flipped my box over and I tried the 24 and I totally landed it.
Sweet.
And it shocked me. I didn't think I could do it. So then I kept doing it. And then I finally was like, hey, can you video me doing this so I can post this on Instagram? I was like, this is awesome. And it was just, it was really nice because I've been feeling the last week, like I really took a bit of a step backwards in terms of my strength and endurance, having been traveling for 3 weeks and I was only able to go to CrossFit a couple of times during the last week I was traveling. And this kind of made me feel like, I'm still making gains and I'm still feeling really good. And then I actually did my first repeat WOD of a WOD I've already done. And I went up 20 pounds on the WOD on the deadlift weight. So that made me feel really good too. And it was still felt like I felt really, I love deadlifts. They're like my favorite thing ever.
Yep, I know that feeling.
So that was actually probably what brought me in to CrossFit today because I was contemplating, I was assembling furniture all day, which is active. And I was like, this has been a pretty like sweaty, yucky day. I could probably skip CrossFit. And then I looked, our box posts the WOD online. I was like, oh, deadlifts. That sounds like fun. So that's what actually brought me in today.
Cool. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, I was going to say, we should actually do a show instead of just chit-chatting the whole time. I'm sure people love listening to our chit-chat. Meanwhile, a bunch of
people. Listen, I dropped some knowledge bombs about scientific studies that happen to be corroborated by Mythbusters.
Or may have actually been Mythbusters being slightly misrepresented. So last week we did our, big 100th episode show, which actually makes this episode 101, which is still a pretty cool number. It's like Dalmatians or something. I don't know.
I was thinking it's like the first course that you take in college that's like legitimate.
Oh, now you know what? If we had been thinking, we could have totally done like a Paleo 101 episode.
Oh, why would we be thinking, Sarah?
I don't know. Life has been a little bit crazy. But actually, I don't think this episode's going to be that different from Paleo 101 because what I want to do. So we did our big episode last week, and what we did is we kind of asked everybody to ask us more personal questions, like things that they actually want to know about us. And one of the things that happened is we got a really wide variety of types of questions. And some of them were definitely about us, but some of them were a little bit more tangentially about us. And some of them were just a lot more just basic paleo questions. And I think that kind of reflected a bit that we're pretty open about our lives out there. So maybe there's not that much curiosity out there about our secret private lives. But we had all of these extra questions that we didn't read last week that are more sort of general paleo questions. And I thought actually it'd be kind of fun to read them. It'd be a bit more of a hodgepodge of questions than what we usually do, because we usually do these sort of themed shows. But it's kind of like, you know, episode 100, less personal, more general, you know, 100B. 101 is what it is. It's Paleo View 101.
Awesome. So I like how you originally said that if we had been thinking, we would have done that. And then you spent 5 minutes justifying how you actually did this on purpose.
We actually, yeah, I didn't do it on purpose. It just accidentally happened that way. I'm not taking credit for that. Are you kidding me?
Lay down the information. I want to hear it. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
All right. So this is a question from somebody without a name, or presumably they have a name, but they just didn't share it.
I think that's better to assume. Yeah.
The question goes, hey, I have a 4-year-old boy who is extremely picky when it comes to food. We have gone almost 100% gluten-free at home. I'm paleo / primal / real food oriented. He eats chicken, grapes, bananas, and that's about it. I can get him to eat different things sometimes, but it's a battle. He has been diagnosed with sensory processing disorder and has an aversion to certain textures. I'd love some ideas on getting him more open to other food, and I'm not above sneaking him stuff.
What do you think she means, not above sneaking him stuff?
Well, I think, you know, it doesn't sound like he's eating any vegetables. So maybe she means like she doesn't mind like mixing vegetables in with ground meat or
making Jerry Seinfeld wife approach.
Right. Making a muffin with a bunch of vegetables in it, or, you know, cookie with whatever. I think that, I mean, that's what I'm going to assume anyways. So, do you have any words of wisdom for...
Did she say how old?
4.
Okay. So, I would say at that age, what works really well with my kids are 2 things. 1, getting them involved on the front end. We've talked about this before. I think we had a couple of kid podcast episodes that Monica can link to in the show notes that we've done before on this. But the key, and I talk about this in Eat Like a Dinosaur, is really getting your children engaged before the food is on the table. So from having a Pinterest board that you know your child can pick any recipe from, to buying recipe books like Sarah and I's or whatever else is on the market, to, you know, whatever your approach is, letting your child choose recipes from some sort of thing that empowers them and makes them feel like they're getting a choice, to going to the grocery store or the farmer's market, picking out the ingredients for that food. Oftentimes, I always let the boys pick anything they want from the produce section. Like, okay, boys, you get 1 choice this week. What do you want? And I'm guaranteed that they're going to choose something healthy because they're in the produce section. And oftentimes, we get crazy things like, you know, kohlrabi and yuca and bitter melon because they're new and we want to try them. And then some of those become our household favorites. But, you know, if you incorporate that into the process, and it'll be interesting and awkward in the beginning, and you'll have to really hype it up as something super exciting that you're doing together and big project and blah, blah, blah. And then over time, integrate that as part of your life. Like, that is just part of our process. Our kids go with us to the grocery store. They know that they get to choose something. Like, if there's a recipe that they want, they tell us before we go. They write ingredients because the older two can read and write. Then we have a board and they write the ingredients that they want to make sure that we get at the store on the board. Now, my kids are almost 9 and 6, but my youngest is 4. And so I also happen to know that the next best technique, and obviously include them in the cooking process, let them mix, let them stir, let them break eggs. You can always scoop eggshells out after. I don't know how many times a whole container of salt's been dumped into a bowl of something and ruined it, but like we never say it's ruined. We're like, oh, you know, accidents happen. It's okay. We'll just start over, and next time mommy will help you with that, you know? But the second best thing that you can do once the food is on the table is really not make it an argument or like a negative space. And I know, Sarah, you have a lot of experience with this and you can talk to it a little bit more. But for me, when there's something on the table that my kids don't want, I make sure that there's something else on the table that I'm guaranteed that they will want. So I know that all of my kids love roasted carrots. They're naturally sweet. They're a vegetable. No problem. Some of my kids like salad. Some of my kids can't stand salad. Some of my kids like beets. Some of my kids can't stand beets. Some of my kids like mushrooms. Some of my kids can't stand mushrooms. So if those things are on the table, then I know that I need to have two things on the table, or else it's going to turn into this combative, you need to eat a vegetable because it's healthy for you and it'll make you grow big and strong. And then the kid saying, but I don't like that vegetable. Can I have something else? And then me saying, well, this is what's on the table. And then it becomes like a power struggle. Whereas if there's two things on the table and I know that they're both healthy other than the meat, then I can say to whatever child, fine, if you don't want salad, no problem. Have more carrots or have more cauli mash or have more whatever it is that the other thing is. And then it's like, oh, okay, I get a choice. I'm in control. I'm empowered. I'm going to eat all this cauli mash. And meanwhile, in my head, I'm like, ha ha ha, you're eating all that cauliflower. So that totally works on my 4-year-old. Oftentimes he starts having, the other day, I'm going to total soapbox tangent here. The other day at the restaurant, he decided he wanted lemonade. I don't know where in the world he thought that he was going to get lemonade. Like, I don't even know where he learned the word lemonade. But we're sitting at the table and he tells the waiter, because I empower the children to order their own food, and he tells the waiter that he wants lemonade. And I look at him and I was like, Wesley, we're not ordering lemonade. We're not having treats right now. We're ordering dinner. Everybody's having water. And he's like, no, I want lemon. And I'm going to have lemonade. And I was like, would you like to get some lemons and squeeze the lemons in your water? And he's like, yes, that would be great. So, okay, simple solution. We're all positive. It's all great. He's squeezing lemons into his water. He's all excited. He's making lemonade. He takes a sip. It doesn't taste like lemonade because there's not a bucket of sugar in that water. And he just starts freaking out, like having a giant tantrum. And the thing that I do about all tantrums is I just kind of ignore that it's happening. And I offer a hug and I say, you know, I say, would you like a hug? Are you feeling sad right now? What can I do for you? And if the only thing is you can get me lemonade, then I just stay strong. And I'm like, I'm sorry, we're not having lemonade right now, but I'll be happy to help you if you want new water or if you, you know, if you want something to eat or whatever it is, these are your choices right now. And, you know, from my experience, a lot of that is a power struggle. And so it's just about making them feel like, you know, they're still in control and empowered in some capacity. For other children, there are actual, you know, food sensitivities and issues that are going on either because the jaws are weak or because, like Sarah's experience, there's just an aversion to certain types of food. And in that case, you know, it takes a little more finesse. But those are my recommendations.
Awesome. So why don't I speak specifically to the sensory processing disorder aspect of this question, just because I have experience with a kid with sensory processing disorder. It's not something that I've talked about very much on the blog or on this podcast because, you know, my oldest daughter has really outgrown it. What sensory processing disorder is it's sort of a selective developmental delay. And there's really no strong evidence in the medical literature that kids outgrow it faster with occupational therapy or without. That being said, we did do 3 months of occupational therapy with my oldest before she started kindergarten because I had a lot of anxiety about her diet going into kindergarten. And we worked on a variety of like coordination and balance and core strength issues. But one of the things that we did in that occupational therapy was we added, like, we would do these obstacle courses that were really fun. Like, she just thought she was playing games, but they're really targeting, you know, specific deficits in, you know, balance and gross motor skills. And then what we would do is, like, one station of the obstacle course would be eating a food that she was finding challenging at home. So I would bring in, you know, before we did this, she wasn't eating any meat whatsoever. And so I would bring in like chunks of cold chicken. And so she'd have to take a bite of cold chicken as part of this obstacle course. And one of the things that we discovered in that, in those 3 months was that she not only was lacking the jaw strength to chew effectively, because she was five. And so we had actually really catered to her texture aversions up until that point, in part because she was so dangerously thin at 1 year old that we were under doctor's orders to fatten her up, because she was going to be failure to thrive if we didn't. So that's like a whole long sob story. But we found she was lacking jaw strength, but she was also lacking the mouth coordination. And she couldn't figure out how to move food from the front of her mouth to the back of her mouth to swallow. And that was something that we actually figured out at home. We were trying to figure out like why she would chew her food for so long. And we realized that it wasn't, you know, she would be chewing until her jaw was like tired and sore, so that she wouldn't want to do another bite. But it was really this part of the coordination of moving the food to the back of her mouth. So one of the things that really helped her was cutting up her food smaller, and then also really moving towards denser and like chewier textures, very, very slowly. So chicken was something that she did fairly well early on, and she did actually fairly well with like really soft braised meats or ground meat, so like a hamburger patty where it kind of it's already pretty much pre-chewed. And so we had a lot of those, and then we'd always have one of the fruits or vegetables that she liked on the table, and we would challenge new things. And there was a lot of overcooked vegetables in the beginning because that was the easiest way to get her to eat something new. And it was a very, very slow road of patience and I don't want to say catering, because it became more just consideration. So consideration for her food challenges. So I would plan a meal so that there would be enough different things that she would be able to eat, and that there would also be something that the rest of us would enjoy eating. And what we ended up doing was having, you know, we were so worried that she wasn't getting enough protein, and she was so thin and she had such weak core strength. So we ended up just making it a rule that she had to eat 1 ounce of meat at every meal. And that made dinner take 1 hour. So like, you know, breakfast would be eggs and she would be okay with scrambled eggs. Lunch was often like grass-fed hot dogs actually it still is grass-fed hot dogs. And that, you know, she would have an easier time with that. And then supper would be like just, you know, meat and vegetables. And it was always more of a challenge. It would take 1 hour for her to get through it. And even still, she's finally, you know, eats her meal fairly easily, but she's still a slow eater. And that's okay. You know, some people actually, I could probably do with slowing down. So I should probably try and do it the other way, and I'll slow down and match her pace instead. But it was really slow going, and there was a lot of discussion. I mean, we ended up talking, like, we found out she was afraid to choke on her food. And so, you know, we had to reassure her. There's a lot of anxiety that goes with sensory processing disorder. So some of it is aversion, and a lot of it is anxiety. So being able to talk with your four-year-old and walk through all of that, and you have to repeat it. So, I mean, there's a lot of things you have to just repeat with that age kid anyways. But what we found has been especially true with our oldest is that we have these calming fears conversations, that we have the same conversation like over and over and over again. Eventually she gets it and we kind of move on. But we sort of, there has to be that repetition, and she gets comfort in that repetition of conversation. It sort of goes beyond routine. And then we also did all the other things that Stacey talked about. And, you know, it was kind of a little bit of everything and then patience. So it took, we noticed a pretty big difference around 6 months after doing this, like, she's got to eat some meat. And it was sort of, we started doing that right towards the end of occupational therapy. They basically said, you're kind of doing everything already on your own. There's nothing really that we're going to be able to add. And I was like, fine. I don't really like driving out here anyways. So we took it from there and we noticed a big difference around the 6 month mark. And one of the big things that happened was she started thickening up and she just started putting on muscle. And it was like her body was starved for that nutrition. And I think as we started to deal with some nutritional deficiencies because of how picky of an eater she was before, it actually started this sort of snowball of good, where it was getting, you know, she was actually putting on muscle. So she was getting stronger. She was getting more coordinated. Her neural health was getting better. So it was easier for her to eat more. She had more energy. So, you know, it just kind of, you know, it did exactly what it was supposed to do and things started falling into place. You know, she's still not the easiest kid in the world, but food is definitely something that I have, you know, we have far fewer battles with her. She still doesn't like dual textured foods. So she still doesn't like it. Like if I chop up some broccoli and some onions and some mushrooms and scramble them in eggs, she doesn't like that. But if I blend spinach and eggs and turn them bright green, it's still the texture of scrambled eggs. And,
so and it's fun, right? Plus, you've made it like fun and exciting. Yeah.
So we still have lots of tricks and we still have ways that we're accommodating her. But we're kind of now at like normal level. Like, you know, we've never told her school that she ever had a diagnosis of sensory processing disorder because we never wanted her to have that label. And, no one's ever brought up anything that was even related to it. Like people there would be shocked to find out that she ever had that diagnosis now. And in large part because of how proactive I was in the year before kindergarten in dealing with a lot of, those things. That was a really long answer.
It's a complicated question. One we have answered before and do have more information on, so feel free to go back and check out those podcasts.
So, now for something completely different. Oh, we should have one of those big... Did you ever watch Monty Python? I'm going to talk about like a big foot coming down.
What?
No, you didn't watch Monty Python, did you?
No, I should have, but I'm not one of those. I wasn't cool at that time.
Monty Python was not for the cool people.
It was for the subversively cool. That was really hard to say.
That was obviously a tongue twister. Okay, anyways, that was my... Like, it would have been a way better, like, nod to Monty Python if you'd ever watched it. And now for something completely different.
I'm sure at least three of our six listeners got that joke.
I was going to say four, but maybe you're right. It's only three. This is also, though, from a person without a name or who didn't share their name with us.
What is the deal with all the anonymous people?
I think everyone else has names, but we're starting off the bat with two anonymous people. Hi, question about paleo and weight loss. I started doing paleo 6 weeks ago. Love it. My concern is the amount of weight I have lost. Reading articles, everyone claims it just falls off. Mine is slow. I have a lot to lose, so I just figured it would fall off. I don't want to complain because I have lost some. Somebody said it might be the number of calories I'm consuming, but I thought I didn't have to count them. I'm stumped. Is that a can of worms that I just opened right there with that question?
I'm just going to try to leave it simple and say that I don't believe that either of these podcast hosts claim that paleo just has weight melt off. Sarah and I both lost a significant amount of weight at certain times in our life. We also have had health repercussions from the way that we lost that weight so quickly. And we both have been working consistently for many years at working on our health and hoping that weight loss comes along with that. But we've both realized because of the health boomerang that we had as a result of the weight loss that we had, that health is more of a priority for both of us. And that sometimes those things go hand in hand and sometimes they don't, but I have actually gained weight over the last 3 years on paleo, but I have also gained a lot of muscle, a lot of strength, and a lot of health that I didn't have before.
Dude, you have a lot of muscle.
Thanks.
You just said, like, I gained a lot of muscle, but, I mean, you didn't have quite the right emphasis there. Okay. It's a lot of muscle.
My Arasti practitioner told me this morning that he's never seen quads as strong as mine. So, for what that's worth.
That's awesome.
I'm like, you haven't been hanging out with paleo people very much, have you? But he actually CrossFits and does hang out with paleo people. So anyway, neither here nor there. That's how I'm going to leave my answer.
That's how you're going to leave your answer? So, I mean, in part because this isn't, we don't have the whole history here of, I'm assuming Mrs. Anonymous, just because of how many of our listeners are women. But, you know, as long as it's, you know, say half a pound a week to a pound a week, I mean, that's a really good rate. I wouldn't even want to see it come off faster than 2 pounds a week, because of the effects on your hormones that can happen if you're losing too fast. Things to look at. I mean, you shouldn't be counting calories, but you also shouldn't be consuming nuts by the 5 pound Costco sized bag. So the number one thing that I would look at is whether or not you're overdoing nuts. I would look at how often you're eating. I would look at whether or not you're eating in the evenings after supper. I would look at how well you're sleeping, because if you're not getting enough sleep, that can slow down weight loss. I would look at stress, because if you're stressed, that can slow down weight loss. If you're postmenopausal, that can slow down weight loss because of the hormone changes. So there's a lot of things that can be going on. I have a post on my site called something like Tips and Tricks for Losing Weight that talks about a lot of these different things. Sometimes it can be the hormone effect of going too low carb when you go paleo, depending on, you know, whose information launched you into paleo. Some people will have you starting really, really low carbohydrate, and that's probably not the best choice for most people. Sometimes it's because you're really overdoing fruit and your blood sugars still aren't very well regulated. So that post is, I guess, where I would direct people to who are frustrated. And sometimes it's really just a question of waiting for the body to adjust hormones in response to what you're eating. But you know, losing weight is a very, very complex problem, and there's a lot of variables, and it's and we don't even understand how diet can affect all of them. But you know, when you go too fast, it can kind of mess with some of your hunger hormones in a negative way that can impact your metabolism and your immune system. It can reduce metabolism. You know, you start turning on starvation programming in your body if you're either too low carbohydrate or too low calorie. And that just starts your body wanting to hold on to everything. So there's a lot of things that can be going on. So I would basically make sure you're eating enough food, maybe count your calories for a couple of days and make sure you're not too low calorie, make sure you're not going crazy on nuts. Because maybe you're like way higher than calories. Like, no, we don't need to be counting calories. And yes, losing weight is a lot more complicated than calories in and calories out. But calories do matter. And so getting a gauge on where you are in terms of your caloric intake can be really instructive. I was actually visiting my mom, and my mom's been frustrated that she's not losing weight, and she lost some weight initially when she went paleo. And so, you know, I had her use chronometer to track her calories and micronutrients for a couple of days, and she was way under eating. She had no idea. So the days that she felt like she was out of control binge eating, she was actually hitting a good amount of calories for weight loss. And so, that can be really instructive. You know, just, you got to make sure that you're actually recording what you're eating and not letting it change what you eat. That's always the trick. Sometimes when you're actually writing it down, it's like, oh, well, then I actually won't eat this thing and I'll eat this other thing instead that I know is going to be healthier, but it's not really good for if you're just using it as a tool for evaluating where there might be problems in your diet.
I too find that I undereat, which is part of my problem with carb cycling on non-fat days. I have to eat a lot of carbs to make up the calories that I'm used to eating with fats.
With normal fats.
Yeah. Because I don't eat refined carbs, which is what they're expecting you to eat in the book, like breads and pastas and... I mean, they're not encouraging you to eat, like, process... anyway, it doesn't matter. My point is just that... You're trying to get those calories from real foods without fats. It's really hard because nature gives you like certain types of foods for a reason, and vegetables just aren't very calorically dense. So
it's true.
When you're training like I'm training, that amounts to a lot of meat, but it has to be lean meat, and it amounts to a lot of carbohydrates. So painful, but yeah.
It's still a sad story, like half an hour later. So this is a related question, and it's from, I think that's probably Jean. Jean with an unusual spelling. Jean, if this is not your name, I apologize. In order to lose weight on the paleo plan, what portion sizes should I be eating?
I eat until I'm satiated. I know that there's like a recommendation for eating meat the size of the palm of your hand, eating nuts the size of your thumb, and eating vegetables the size of your plate or your whole hand.
Or if you're me, the size of your table.
Right. But I think for me, if you're just starting, like the biggest things that I did were I ate the same things that I had been eating, and I just took away the things that I wasn't eating anymore, like pasta and bread and rice, and I replaced that with vegetables and fruit. Like, that's the best way that I can describe to people. In real life paleo, we actually have table set with, like, you can see portion sizes and you can see foods that we've paired together that, you know, will give you an idea of what to eat and how to eat it, but... You know, it really isn't that complicated. It's really just a matter of replacing the foods that you no longer eat with more vegetables. Like, you can't mess up if you do that.
Yep, I agree. It's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but it's you know, there's a lot of experimentation that can happen. My approach is to, you know, make sure my protein is a good size for my activity level. So, I basically try and eat about a 6 ounce serving of protein, at every meal at supper. You know, if it's a steak, it might be an 8 ounce steak, but that's just cause steak's yummy. And then I fill my plate with vegetables, mostly non-starchy because, I tend to not feel that great when I eat starchy vegetables, although I do tend to want them more after a workout. So I guess that's like carb backloading by instinct. And I eat 3 meals a day. And so that's just, I mean, sometimes it's your portion sizes will also depend on how often you're eating, and how big you are and, how much weight you have to lose. So there's some wiggle room. So, you know, try something and see if it works. And if it doesn't, change it. If it does, just be happy.
I would say that I would put more emphasis on rather than like portion sizes, then, you know, making sure that you're getting the right kinds of healthy fats, which is something I didn't do in the beginning and made a much improved my digestion. So, you know, from my perspective, I would say if you can focus on just, you know, getting good, healthy fats, and Sarah and I both have books on that, but those would be foods rich in omega-3 or foods naturally high in fat. So like olives and avocados and macadamia nuts.
Macadamia nuts.
But if you're getting your oil from something that isn't naturally high in fat, like corn, then they're having to do a lot of processed things to get it there. So if you focus on getting some of those healthier fats, especially from seafood and the foods that I just mentioned, then, satiated feelings should improve, as well as your digestion, in my experience, which helps your body process the nutrients that you're giving it better. Because if you're fully digesting that food, then your body is able to use all the nutrients efficiently and should trigger you to crave things less. And that's a really simplified version of a complicated process. But I would say that that's something to focus on if you're thinking about how to compile your plate, you know, coconut oil, lard, tallow, if you can tolerate it, butter or ghee, and olive oil, avocado oil, macadamia oil for things that aren't really cooking, like mayonnaise and salad dressing. And that really helps me feel satiated, and it helps me not crave things because I'm able to absorb the nutrients from what I am eating, so that my body no longer says, give me more, because I need nutrients. That might be a personal problem, but probably not.
Probably not. Our next question is from Rochelle. What is your opinion on raw goat and sheep milk products?
Do you tolerate it? That's my opinion. I believe that they add value, and I believe if you don't tolerate it, then it's detracting from what it's adding. So I've recently, in the last few months, added back grass-fed heavy cream. And I have now added back high-quality yogurt with success. I really don't like the taste of goat and sheep things, except like high-quality goat cheese in, like, let's say a salad, but that's just a personal thing. If you're someone, especially who doesn't have weight to lose, who's trying to, you know, get some nutrient-dense calories and you tolerate it well, by all means, go for it. I would say check out like Chris Kresser or The Perfect Health Diet or Russ Crandall for like ideas and recipes and information on that. That's my opinion.
I think I just plain old agree.
Sweet. Also, so Mark Sisson with the whole like primal thing is basically that.
Like, yeah, it's paleo with high quality dairy. Yeah, I mean, I've gone through the science when it comes to dairy, and you know, when it comes to low quality dairy, you know, high heat, pasteurized, low fat milk from animals living in factories that are being fed large amounts of grain, you know, there's some really compelling reasons to be leery of consuming a lot of that kind of dairy. So like the stuff you get in your normal grocery store. When it comes to high quality dairy, and most of those arguments kind of fall apart. With raw dairy, there's some huge benefits. There's, you know, enzymes that help you digest lactose. You know, it's basically a lot easier to digest. But there is an infection risk, and you know, people do need to know. You know, pasteurization saved thousands of lives because it stopped TB from being rampant across the world. And there was lots of more minor infections that people were getting from raw milk, like strep throats, which before antibiotics was not such a minor thing. So, you know, people do need to be making sure that they talk to their farmers, that they know what their farmers' policies are on antibiotics use, and that they understand that even with really conscientious farmers, there is still a risk of infection, and that is a individual choice that people need to make for themselves. You know, they, especially, you know, grass-fed, you know, high, full-fat dairy, whether you're talking from cows or goats or sheep, have some great fat-soluble vitamins, some really heart-healthy fats in them. They have some really cool short-chain fatty acids that can increase metabolism. The whey protein in dairy is basically everything the body needs to make glutathione, which is one of our dominant antioxidant enzymes. Like, there's some pretty cool stuff in dairy if you tolerate it. What's an advantage with goat and sheep milk over cow milk? So cow, there's basically two different forms of casein, and there's more than this, but dominant between animals we get milk from. A1 casein and A2 casein. So most milk that you get in stores is A2 casein. There's some cows, and some farmers will have dairies with A1 cows. Goat and sheep are A1. And A1 is less allergenic than A2. So sometimes when people are allergic to casein, they can't have casein from A2 cows, but they can have goat milk or they can have sheep milk. And it's just because the casein is a different, slightly different form, and it's less allergenic. And you know what's really awesome about that answer that I just gave? It totally answers the next question.
Sweet.
I know. Although there's one part of the next question that I probably didn't answer, so I'm just going to read it and then answer that like little extra bit. The next question is from Jennifer. I have noticed that some folks who claim dairy sensitivity can still have butter, ghee, and goat or sheep's milk, whereas I have a very distinct response to any/all dairy, including ghee, and goats or sheep's products. I've been told that I may have a casein sensitivity as opposed to lactose intolerance. Can you please explain the difference? Want me to take it on?
Yeah.
So lactose is a sugar in milk. It's very inefficiently digested. Only a certain percentage of people have the enzyme that's needed to break that down past childhood. It's called lactase. So lactose intolerant, lactose is a FODMAP. So the symptoms of lactose intolerance are usually things like gas, stomach upset, diarrhea. It's quite different from a casein sensitivity, which is typically actually more like an allergy, that you can have a whole range of symptoms. And so there's a lot of lactose-free milk products out there, yogurt because...
Don't do it!
Right. The yogurt because the probiotic bacteria in yogurt eat the lactose will be very low lactose, so some people with lactose intolerance can have yogurt. With casein sensitivity, all dairy products have casein to varying degrees. So like cheese is the worst because it's pretty much pure casein. And then the more you get into the pure fat, the less and less casein there is. So somebody who has a mild casein sensitivity or, for example, has a lactose intolerance, your butter has almost no lactose. It's, I think, 18% protein and water. So I think it's 82% fat. And then the other 18% is protein and water. So there's still a substantial amount of casein. I know I don't react very well to butter. I get migraines from dairy. And I'll get like a mild headache if I have a little bit of butter. If I have a lot of butter, I'll get a pretty severe headache. Ghee is clarified butter. So you remove that 18% or whatever it is. I might have the percent wrong of water and protein. And so ghee is typically about 99.7% pure fat. So there's about 3% that's left that is typically protein because the water contents evaporates off. And so if you have an allergy to dairy, that 0.3% can still be a huge problem. And I know for my four-year-old who's incredibly sensitive to dairy, she can't even have regular ghee. What we have found is cultured grass-fed ghee. Pure India Foods has it. We've also tried another one. What the name escapes me at the moment. But generally, if it says that it's cultured for 24 hours and then it's clarified, the culturing degrades the casein, so there's no trace casein left in that ghee. And my daughter, who's like canary in the coal mine for casein, is fine with it. So. The difference is really, you know, being sensitive to a sugar in milk versus being sensitive to a protein in milk. And, you know, while people can have really severe symptoms from lactose intolerance, the reaction that you're having to casein is an immune reaction. And that has, even though the symptoms aren't necessarily as dramatic as explosive diarrhea, they actually have probably a broader negative impact on the human body. I just said explosive diarrhea.
It made me uncomfortable. I was like, we usually use euphemisms, Sarah. Way to just lay it out there.
I was feeling all science-y. I was like explaining A1 and A2 casein. We didn't do a Science with Sarah segment. I just had to be, I should have said, as Stacy would say, an everybody out moment.
There you go. See, euphemism. Now everybody knows what I mean when I say everybody out.
Everyone's been wondering for 101 episodes, exactly does Stacy mean?
What does Stacy mean about if she eats a large meal early in the morning without her pills? Oh, that's what she means.
She means, everyone, just to be clear, she means explosive diarrhea.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm feeling so comfortable right now. My leg is not shaking and my face is not red at all.
I can hear you blushing.
I am.
It is.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
I may be blushing a little bit too, though, so it's like solidarity.
Are we done? Can we end?
No, I have one last question.
Oh, good Lord.
It's just one.
It's getting worse by the minute.
I don't think this one will include explosive diarrhea at all.
You've officially said that 3 times now. No more. I'm cutting you off.
Just saying,
you've reached your limit.
It's making you feel uncomfortable, and I'm enjoying.
I'm going to say things that'll make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, and then we won't be able to have our family-friendly reading.
All right, last question.
All right, so our last question is from Rachel. Does eating lots and lots of healthy food create intolerances, thinking especially of foods used to replace others, example, coconut milk, oil, flour, tapioca, sweet potatoes? So she's basically saying, like, if we're eating, you know, tons of new foods, are we eventually going to become intolerant to them?
I guess that's a good question. There's been a lot of, you know, differing information, both from doctors and I'm sure Sarah can reference scientific literature about the truth to what actually causes intolerance or not. I personally think that it's the manipulation of foods that our bodies weren't adapted to eat well from an evolutionary standpoint, not to get, you know, if you don't believe in evolution, what I mean is, you know, from when agriculture came about, a lot of the foods that we ate started changing very rapidly. And we started tinkering with foods and playing with their structure more quickly than our bodies could understand and adapt to how we'd done that scientifically. So, you know, if we're toying with, you know, the protein structure and the type of foods that we're eating, like sweet potatoes and arrowroot, if it's, you know, highly produced and been modified, then I would say it's very likely that we could. If we're eating, you know, heirloom tomatoes, I don't think so. That's just my personal opinion, and I don't personally believe that there's enough information and scientific understanding even of, you know, where these things are coming from, because there's so much different opinion out there. So, I mean, as a pregnant woman, I had one doctor tell me that I needed to avoid eating peanuts entirely because I didn't want my baby to have an allergy. And then I had another doctor 2 years later tell me that I needed to eat peanut butter twice a week to make sure that the baby didn't have an allergy. You know, so like there's just, I think, not a solid understanding of that information for me to make a declarative statement, but it's just my personal opinion that if I'm eating food that, you know, is grown from the most, not integral, with integrity, if it's grown with integrity and, you know, close to the source that, like, my body and my ancestors would have been used to eating, that would have, you know, like, my grandmother's genes are still inside me. If she wouldn't have ever eaten that food, I'm probably not going to do well on it. But if she did eat that food, then I probably won't develop an intolerance to it, is my personal opinion.
I was going to go kind of a different direction.
Go for it.
Okay. So I think one of the...
Are you going to tell me I'm wrong? Will this be the second time we've disagreed on something?
No, I'm just... The second time. No, I agree with what you're saying. When I hear her question, one of the things that I hear about, it's a common experience. Would people adopt a paleo diet to deal with a bunch of food sensitivities? So they kind of come to paleo because they get food sensitivity testing or allergy testing. They get one of these big blood panels and it says they're allergic to basically all the things that make them paleo. Then someone says, well, you should just follow a paleo diet because you're so close to it anyways. They see that a paleo diet can be great for allergies. They go on paleo and they start developing food sensitivities to paleo foods that they didn't have before. I think I'm interpreting the question slightly differently than you are. And really what that comes from is having a leaky gut and having a gut that hasn't had the opportunity to heal. Because what happens is, you know, a lot of these foods that are common intolerance foods, they have a couple of things not so great going for them. They tend to be hard to digest. They tend to have proteins that cross the gut barrier unusually easily. And then they're very allergenic. So they, you know, get the immune system all excited. And
I'm so excited.
Well, I was going to say hot and bothered, but I wasn't quite sure that that was quite the right word either. So some word that is means badness. And what happens is, like, even when you change your diet, it can take a while for the gut to heal. And for, you know, especially if you're coming from, you know, you've got chronic illnesses, you've got a lot of inflammation, you're maybe not digesting your food well because of chronic stress. Maybe your gallbladder is not working optimally. And there's lots of challenges that people have when they come to a paleo diet. And it can be a long road to really healing the gut to the point where you're not developing these new allergies to things left, right, and center. So if that's the case and you're coming to a paleo diet, you know, with a lot of food sensitivities, a lot of food sensitivities is like one of the hallmarks of a leaky gut. And what can happen is you can develop new sensitivities to the new foods, and especially the ones that you're eating a lot of, depending on how allergenic they are. So tapioca is tends to be a little bit more allergenic than sweet potatoes, for example. Just naturally, more people tend to develop sensitivities to tapioca. So what you can do if you're going through that is do more food cycling. So, you know, you can either do it in a really structured way where you have a list of food you eat 1 week and then you have a completely different list of food that you eat the next week and a completely different list for the third week, and then you cycle through those 3 weeks over and over again. Or you can do it more of a, you know, a little bit more informally and just make sure you're not overdoing any particular food and that you're not eating things sort of the same things day after day after day. And one of the things that should happen, you know, as you follow, you know, a paleo diet, one of the great things about a paleo diet is it's really centered around gut health. And as your gut heals, especially if you start doing things like bone broth, fat-soluble vitamins, you know, probiotic foods and these other things that we know are really good for aiding gut healing, once you have a really healthy gut and you've eating a lot of nutrient-dense foods, so you have a well-regulated immune system, then the answer is no, you shouldn't be developing food sensitivities to foods. If you are, then it's probably a situation like what Stacey's saying about the food being manipulated to the point where it's more allergenic than what it should be. And that should be a big red flag when things like that start happening.
That was much more logical than where I went with it, but you got both. You got. This is why there's two people on a podcast.
This is why we will never do podcasts individually, because I would just go like super, super technical. Actually, you'd probably be really good at a podcast by yourself.
Oh, Sarah, it's okay. I would just ramble the whole time. I would answer one question. There would be nobody to get me back on topic.
You'd just be like one.
I'm like, does that make sense? Okay, probably not. Let me just explain it another way.
I could totally see you doing that. I could see like the answer like slowly evolving over time. That'd be great. We could just call it like the Soapbox Show with Stacey Toth.
That's what it's turning into now that I'm going to have two podcasts. I mean, just soapbox on top of soapbox.
You could have it. You could change the menu on your blog instead of podcast menu. It could be the soapbox menu.
Totally. Cool. Well, I'm going to call this a wrap. I've been on my feet all day, and I've got a rest for a competition this weekend. For those of you who are interested, I'm sure I'll be Instagramming and sharing about this competition that I've been training for in Roanoke, Virginia on Saturday. If you're interested in coming and you're hearing this podcast and you're in that general area around the southern part of Virginia or any part thereabout, feel free to come down to the Commonwealth Games in Roanoke, Virginia. You can just Google that and all the information will come up. Doesn't appear to be a very large show, So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. I'm hoping that it's still going to happen and that there's the minimum number of women competing so that I can qualify for nationals, which is what my whole goal with doing this competition is. But if nothing else, it will be an experience to go to a different gym outside of my comfort zone with equipment I haven't touched and try to be competitive. It'll be interesting.
Have fun with that.
And I'll talk about it next week on the podcast, I'm sure.
Sweet. You'll talk about it on both of your podcasts.
Yeah. Well, Viv won't be going with me because she's got to hold down the fort here at Nova Strongman while I compete. So I will definitely be recapping on both podcasts, which will just become obnoxious. I'll try to make it like different things or something so that people aren't listening to the same thing twice.
Viv and I are going to interject differently.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Viv would be interested in different things than you.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. We'll test that theory.
Cool. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Again, I want to thank everybody for their excellent ratings and reviews in iTunes. And honestly, I don't even know if Stitcher allows you to do that, but if they do, by all means, please do it. It really allows us to get more people interested in the podcast. And Sarah and I are looking at how to make this podcast the most efficient for you. I know some people may be listening to us on Radio.io, which this podcast is cross-posted to. And we've looking into some things to figure out how to make it efficient for you. So if you have feedback as to what you would like to see improved or what you really love about it, or if you don't want anything changed at all, communicate that to us. Because if you don't, you can't complain if we change things later. But you'll complain anyway, at least two of you.
Yes, well, two out of the six listeners.
Yeah, exactly. One third is a complainy group. Okay, sorry. That means that the rest, two thirds of you, are silently content. So we just try to remind ourselves of that.
I podcast for the two thirds. That could be like a new motto. All right, so I think that's a wrap, and we'll talk to y'all. Y'all. Ooh, I sounded south there.
That was not Canadian at all.
Nope. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. It's all coming in here. We'll see everybody next week.
Sweet.
Except we won't see them. We'll talk to them.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Brain broth. Sounds awesome.